It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed to the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are we doing today?
I am doing fantastic.
Well, if I was any better, I'd be you then.
You'd just be so lucky.
No.
Oh, the weather is wonderful.
I know. Finally got that break in the heat and humidity. Yeah. Got some sticks and branches to pick up, but I'll take it.
Were you telling me about 20 days till the kids are back in school?
But who's counting? Who is counting?
6 hours, 18. No, I won't go there.
I know. Yeah. So, yes, they go back Wednesday the 16th. And I'm not sure where summer went, but here we are.
Here and gone.
So, what are you doing today?
Good coffee today, as always. Thanks to the Chef Shop, our underwriter since the beginning, over a year now. John, we've been around. I started, you know, the first Saturday in July in 2016, and it is now 2017, almost August. We're getting real close here, but the Chef Shop is hung in there with us. Thanks to Scott and Nancy for supporting us all along the way. They've gone through the 20th anniversary. They recently received national acclaim, as it were, of course, from the Gourmet Insider magazine. And they were listed as an all-star, as we knew they were all along. But lots of stuff coming up as far as the fall, preparing for Christmas. Believe it or not, they're talking about Christmas already. I was talking to Lisa the other day, and she's like, yeah, we're getting things ready for the holidays. And I'm like, really? It's July. Come on. But it's coming soon. So
I guess from their end, with getting it all in stock or planning, I guess you do have to start now. Well, crazy, but yeah.
You really do. They're they're having meetings on that right now and getting prepared. So, and the coffee, today I went with more of a standard, you know, like golden pecan type coffee. So, like that. It's the old chunks of buttery southern pecans mixed into the popularly flavored coffee. It's very rich and it is delicious. I got to say that.
Well, that's a great segue because in the market segment, I have three stories. And the first one is the show's The Financial Cafe, where you grab a cup of coffee, sit down, and listen to some common sense financial advice in a very relaxed setting. But we're helping people live longer.
We are doing that.
Good news, if you love coffee, you may live longer. And this was written by Rita Rubin. And there are two new large studies that suggest it may have been coffee that bubbled from the fountain of youth. Both studies, one conducted in the U.S. and one across 10 European countries, found that people who drank even a single cup of coffee a day, decaf and or caffeinated, live longer than people who didn't drink any coffee.
Well, I believe it, John. I mean, it sounds more like a story that you would have written, but nevertheless, I'm going to live to be 120 at that rate.
Well, I'm not dying. We've talked about that before, and this is the reason why, because I do drink a fair amount of coffee.
A fair amount?
Still, the consistency...
Let's be honest.
it's a subjective term.
Yeah, yeah.
Still, the consistency of findings across different ethnic groups in the U.S. study and different methods of preparation, such as espressos, watered-down coffee in Scandinavia, adds credence to the notion that coffee protects against many of the leading causes of death. And as a trio of Johns Hopkins University scientists wrote, a protective effect of coffee is biologically plausible. The studies and the editorial were published online recently in the annals of internal medicine. Coffee is a rich source of various compounds that have biological activity. Many of these have antioxidants and anti-inflammatory properties. Deaths from digestive and circular causes are reduced. Drink more coffee. They do have at the end, I'm not sure there's enough evidence to support non-coffee drinkers to start drinking coffee yet.
Yet.
But there has been several studies that show that, and I think it's more the antioxidant that comes with coffee. So
can't get enough of those antioxidants, I'll tell you.
Whatever they are.
You know,
free radicals,
free,
I don't know.
Free or, you know, contained or whatever.
No such thing as a free radical. So, yeah, there we go. We will be doing this show for a long, long time if we keep drinking the coffee and the Chef Shop continues to be our sponsor.
What a deal.
I like it. So for today, I have a couple more stories, but for today, the topic today will be helping your kids with money, the various stages, different ages, things that you can do. We have a couple websites that you can use for resources, but to get the importance of getting your kids started early on financial fitness, if you will.
Financial wellness.
There we like
financial wellness for kids. As you said, you really can't start early enough. Parents can start planning as soon as they know they're going to have a kid, kind of get things moving along.
So, and there's another article on how to raise your kids to be frugal, but not too frugal. We'll talk about that in a little bit here, but
there's always a balance.
The picture was from Family Ties, if you remember Michael Keaton.
Yes, definitely.
He was quite the the money guy in that show. But we also have one here, which is an opinion, a behavioral designer's 6 tricks to keep you from making stupid investment decisions. I don't know if we need 6. I know you like to talk about one in particular that helps you keep making stupid investment.
You mean having a plan?
Yeah.
Gotta have a plan. Always have a plan. I was looking over some research material for the next show we have. We're going to talk about credit scores. And this was something I put together 10, 12 years ago. Been updated, but amazingly, it hasn't changed a lot. But one of the main factors in having a good credit score was, guess what, John? Have a plan. You know, put it in writing, specific time frames, specific objectives, implement and monitor.
Remember those Dennis Hopper commercials? You gotta have a plan with that only voice that Dennis Hopper could have. I forget what company that was for, but I do remember his line.
Gotta have a plan. Well, it was memorable. At least you remember him anyway. Oh, well.
So anyway, they talk, and the 6 things he talks about is what he called educate preemptively and just in time. And basically that's an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
In many cases.
When he called counter bias, if you want to sell stocks because you're concerned about a market crash, take a breath, calculate the gains tax that you will have to pay, and that may help slow you down before you make a rash decision. As we talked about many times, any investment decision based on emotion
is bad.
Is bad, and will most likely be wrong. Make safe options sexy and dangerous options boring. And if you think about some of the terms that the industry uses, advanced or pro or power use, these are designed to help you create portfolios that are obviously more risky, more invested in stock, and could put you in a situation where your portfolio is taking on much more risk than you would really need to and can lead you to very bad decisions.
Well, it's really going back to the basics. And one of the things that surprises me right now, John, is the availability of training/seminars/education on alternative investing. Now, you and I both know what alternative investing means, but I don't know that our listeners do. But it's a method of further diversifying the portfolio into investments which one would otherwise probably not choose in a well-balanced and a well-diversified minimal risk type of portfolio. But they're pushing the limit. You know, we're up amazingly in terms of the stock market continuing, and they're looking for more ways to get more blood out of that turnip.
I'm not
sure alternative investing is for the certainly not for the weak of heart.
Well, and a lot of this is driven by speculation, which always makes me nervous. But that's why it's important to have that plan and know the amount of volatility that you can take. And for those of you that haven't rebalanced your portfolio, this would be a great time to sit down, go through all your statements, look at what your target portfolio should be, where your portfolio is today, and probably take off a lot, take some of that, those winnings off the table and rebalance back, because there's going to be a correction. Nobody knows when, but we know that the markets go up. We know that the markets go down. There will be a correction, and you don't want that correction to happen when you have your portfolio over allocated to the part of the market that's going to drop the most.
Well, and we talk about it time and time and time again, and retirees who are within 5 years or less of retirement, you know, they are taken upon the fact that the market, you know, depending on who you listen to, this is up, that's up, everything's up, and maybe their portfolio wasn't quite as aggressive by design because of their age approaching retirement, and now they're saying, well, maybe I should become a little more aggressive, and that ship has sailed. It's not the time to get more aggressive. It's the time to take a look at the portfolio, make sure that where you're at is where you need to be, where you want to be, and not taking on more risk than you had anticipated, because making those emotional changes at this point in time is just not going to do you any good.
I agree. Emphasize alternatives with less potential for harm. Again, you know, if you have a well-balanced, well-diversified portfolio, there are asset classes that can sometimes generate equity-like returns without the risk. And, you know, explore your alternatives and give that portfolio a good review and get timely feedback. And that's what a plan does. If you update your plan once a year, you're getting feedback at least once a year on your portfolio and the likelihood of you meeting your goals and objectives.
Well, and there are just so many basic things out there, John, that a lot of our clients, a lot of individuals don't understand the basics. They're so busy doing what they do on a day-to-day basis that they, you know, when you're talking about portfolio adjustment within a qualified account, you don't have to worry about the gains, capital gains, the interest, dividends, or earnings, because they are deferred until such point that you elect to take it out. But if you're dealing with a non-qualified account, as we've talked about before, then you have to be careful of what you select and how you sell and which ones you sell, because if you do capture gains, you're going to be taxed on it. And we know now that Illinois has bumped up the tax rate again, you're going to be paying more. Most people probably saw that in their paycheck this week, that their take-home is less. Well, guess what? The balance of what you didn't get to take home is going to the state of Illinois. Thanks to your legislators. Yeah, they do such a good job.
But, I love them having my money.
We're not biased at all, are we, Jen?
No, you know, yeah. I always think back to the Boston Tea Party, and what they were protesting over, it pales in the comparison of how we're taxed now.
Oh, don't get me started. So we don't have enough time.
For another show. We'll bring a soapbox show. That's what we could do for a month. We can do a soapbox month and just two shows. You can have a soapbox, two shows. I can have a soapbox. That'll work.
We could do that.
They'd probably take us off the air after that, but
well, they might.
We'll go out swinging. So how to raise your kids to be frugal, but not too frugal. I think if children learn at an early age to make good, sound financial decisions, they will likely be frugal because they understand the ramifications. He added the extreme frugality is counterproductive. If you're too tight, you can miss opportunities with friends and family that are meaningful just to save a few more dollars that you likely aren't going to spend anyway. So there is a good balance when it comes to teaching kids about money. Some of the bullet points here were teach your children a good, strong work ethic. We try to work out with our children that they have a chore list, and so many of the chores are just because you live under the roof. And then there are other additional chores to earn money as opposed to just giving them an allowance each week to just go out and spend. And we would call that an entitlement, which our government is good at providing.
They are good. And, you know, especially those jobs around the house that mom and dad don't want to do.
You saw right through that, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Help your children have experiences with money. That's always good. I know when my kids say they want to go to the store with me and they go grab, you know, some money and they want to go spend it, then we have a talk about, you know, which we'll get into too, needs and wants and so forth. And then bullet point three, which is reminding me of something that I used to do in a past life, and I'm going to have to get back into it because I did enjoy doing it, was getting an elementary score, so forth, to teach personal finance. And I forget the foundation that worked with our trust, the trust company that I worked for, but they would provide a packet of materials that I would take into a classroom of, you know, third graders, whatever it may be. And we would go through these different activities as far as wants and needs and so forth. And it was a fun experience for me. The kids had a blast because now all of a sudden you had this stranger in their classroom and it wasn't their teacher giving them homework. But I remember doing that.
How strange was he?
Oh, well, it was me. So we'll just leave it at that. But that's another great way because you kind of get a captive audience and it's not the parents. So other advisors out there, if you're listening or other people that are interested, I'm going to have to look that up and come back, and we'll talk about that on a different show. But I remember doing that, prompted my memory, and I remember doing that. And that was a blast. I had a fun time with the kids. We had all these activities and taught them a little bit about money and saving. And, you know, if you save, then you can buy something bigger down the road or do something more exciting than if you just, every time you get a dollar bill in your pocket, you go spend it.
Well, it's about priorities. We talk about that all the time. It's the needs versus wants. It's a matter of, you know, now versus the future. You really have to take into account all aspects of investing, all aspects of finance. The basics are the basics. You can't spend more than you make. If you're working towards a specific goal, set a timeline, plan how much it's going to take to put away to reach that goal. And after you've accumulated the money, then you go spend it. That's a foreign concept to a lot of the younger generation. Millennials, I'll pick on particularly because they would rather go spend it now and worry about paying for it later. And that's just not a basic tenet of good financial planning, of good service, because you can't just continue to rack up debt and not pay it down.
Why? The government does it.
We're talking about good examples here, John. Not government, but there are a lot of basic tenets, and like you, I love teaching the younger folks, as I've talked about before, some of the classes out here at SIU, talking to groups of juniors and seniors who are about to venture out into the world.
Stay in school!
And they haven't figured out that it's real. It's real out there.
It's bad.
But we do talk about that. And again, our next show, we're going to get into credit scores in great depth. But I talked to him about establishing credit. One of the first things we did with Christy, my daughter, as many of you know, when she was younger, she wanted to, she was doing camping and, you know, had some friends. They go out and camp and a couple of them had ATVs and I wasn't a huge fan, but nevertheless, she wanted to get an ATV, and so we counseled her, and she did. She was probably 17, 18 years old, and we put it on. She charged it. She got an account. She charged it. She paid it off, and that was the start of her credit.
Wait. Let's go back here a second.
Yeah.
I know you. You like ATVs. You didn't like it because she was on it.
Well, that's true.
Okay. I just want to clarify that because I've seen pictures of you on an ATV.
That was in the mountains in Colorado, John. I mean, you know, come on.
I'm just saying, I know that you have.
But she had she had a really nice four-wheel ATV. But she did. She was able to, she put it on credit and she paid it off in less time than was allotted. And gave her a good start on her credit score, which has continued to grow. And the other day she commented to me, now that we have the renovation of the building, her new office in Granite in full swing, and she bought the 1986 Ford F-150 truck that she's along with her boyfriend Josh, are rehabbing, and it's going to be a marketing advertising tool for them. So she's learned to appreciate the fact that she has good credit and she earned it, and it's come in handy all the way down the road. So,
how many miles are on that 1986 F-150?
Well, that depends. It has an engine, we're told. It's a relatively new engine in it that has 50,000 miles on the engine. The drive shaft looked like it had already been cut and shortened a couple of times, and you know they decided to take. I had a four, I guess it was a four speed manual transmission, which they'd taken out and replaced with a C16 automatic.
Oh, wow.
From a vintage. So they're going to have the drive shaft cut again, and then get a new yoke and attach it. She didn't even know how to spell differential, you know, a couple of months ago, but now she's playing with one. So.
Wow. Good for her.
It's getting there. It's a beautiful truck. And I told her it was green. It's not blue. So she found the paint actually, and it's called green.
You just had to get that out there.
I had to get that out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So teaching kids about money. This is our last show for July. I don't know where July went, but our last show for July, and July was a month about kids and children and teaching responsibility before they go out into that cold, big world. And introducing kids to money as soon as possible, looking at, you know, the younger ages, as soon as children can count, introduce them to money. Take an active role in providing them with information, repetition, and so forth. Communicate with children as they grow about your values concerning money. It's a don't have a do as I say, not as I do attitude when it comes to teaching your children, because they watch what you do. They say what you say. Learn that a couple times the hard way.
The hard way, yeah. I can see that.
Wow, where did you hear that from you? Oh, didn't. So,
I didn't think you were listening that time.
Exactly. That's when you decide to listen to me, right? Help children learn the difference between needs, wants, and wishes. Setting goals.
That's a good one.
We talk about the, you know, even as an adult, set your goals, your financial plan. Introduce children to the value of saving versus spending. A couple things that you can do. Use a clear jar to save. The piggy bank is a great idea, but it doesn't give your kids any visuals. So use a clear jar and they can see the money grow.
Do you have to water it?
Money doesn't grow on trees. Set an example. We just talked about that. Little eyes are watching you. If you're slapping down the plastic every time you go out to dinner to the grocery store, they will eventually notice that and think that they will lose the kind of the value of money. I don't know about that. You explain that you're using debit versus credit during that transaction. But I do think at some point we will get to a cashless type society, and we'll see. Maybe Bitcoin and all that stuff that has come up. It's a little scary, but show them that stuff costs money. You know, if you want, you know, my kids and I, we will look at the brand name product, you know, whether it's cereal or whatever, and then look at the non-brand name and how much you can save, and then show that savings at the end of grocery shopping or whatever. It teaches them that you can get similar, if not the same exact product for a lot less money. So that's something you can do when they're younger. You know, if you're saying teach children about money, I know our school, they have classes on the different denominations, the different coins. They have to learn how to count money. Clip coupons. You know, that's something if you want to show how they can save money, what clipping coupons is, or now with the advent of technology, the coupon is on your phone, and then you hand the phone and they scan your phone. And
I'm not a big fan of that, John.
You don't like coupons?
Oh, I love coupons. I've always had a philosophy throughout my entire life that it's against my religion, my better judgment, to pay full price for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So coupons, negotiation, I remember one point I totally embarrassed Diane and Christy. We were out shopping and it used to be, you may remember, Famous Bar.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You know, going back to the day before acquisition and merger and everything occurred. But we were out and we were looking for a particular piece of clothing, actually. And anybody who has shopped for clothing and realizes that you know, something that has about $2 worth of material and a couple of bucks worth of labor, and they put a $100 price tag on it is ridiculous and against my better judgment to buy. So I approached the department during a closeout period and negotiated down the price and got what we wanted for about half of what they originally wanted for it. But yeah, they tend to go away. Same thing happens when I buy vehicles. I remember when we acquired one, one of them was Christy. She was, wanted to get a truck. So we were out truck shopping and it took about an hour and a half of negotiation to get the dealership to see it my way. But we got what we wanted for the price I wanted. So yeah, I had coupons, discounts, you know, if you don't ask, you don't know, you know, you might be able to get it. So any way you can save money, you know, a dollar saved is a dollar in your pocket, not somebody else's. So, yeah. You know, don't waste it. Make sure you're getting good value for what you are spending.
My wife is definitely better at haggling than I am. I remember we were on our honeymoon and we were in Cozumel and there was a jacket that we thought her younger brother would like, and he gave us a price, and I knew that that guy was going to be in for a long, drawn-out process because that was way higher than what my wife had mentioned, and they went back and forth, and eventually my wife walked away from it and said, okay, and as we're walking away, the guy yelled at her saying, you don't love your brother enough to buy him the jacket? And she turned around, she said, not at that price. And kept going.
Good for her.
He didn't know what to do.
I could see her doing that. Yes. I really could.
So, I married very well because she's much better at that than I am.
A little bit frugal, huh?
Absolutely. Now, I, you know, for the bigger purchases and stuff, you know, like a car, I will go out and get the blue book and, you know, go in with a set price and say, okay, here, you know, kind of here it is. Mm-hmm. But going back and forth, that's... Especially on, you know, small stuff like that. That's not my cup of tea, if you will.
Yeah, it's
or coffee.
No, it's not my cup of coffee either. It's yeah, I've refined my technique quite a bit. Now, you know, we did buy a car about a year ago. We keep our vehicles. We've still got our 2000 Dodge Durango with 150,000 miles on it. Runs great, and tend to do that. But I did for whatever reason. Probably emotional more than anything else, did swap cars, buy one last year. And I just went in and my approach now is if I'm not talking 20% or more off of MSRP, we're not going to talk. So that's where I start and then go down from there. And they evidently were interested in dealing that day because it wasn't more than an hour and we had the deal done and we drove away in a new car. But
there you go.
Yeah, I got it for my price.
Yep. And my kids like that car.
Oh, it's a pretty car. I like it.
Here's you know, another good idea. Play an imaginary restaurant as opposed to going out for dinner. Promote a variety of skills such as setting the table, learning good manners, making change, and then go through as you are eating the meal, how much it cost to prepare that meal, and then break that down on a per plate basis. So the children can learn that you can have a meal at home and each very nice meal at home and each plate costs, you know, $2 versus if you went to a restaurant and each plate is costing you $8 or $9.
Big difference. When you go
especially
out
when you got four kids.
And how'd that happen, John? I don't, you know.
Now, the stork.
Yeah, stork.
The stork had, landing rights at our roof.
It was favorable, obviously. But when you go out, it really, you can go out and have a nice meal reasonably, or you can go out and blow a whole big bunch of money on something that, you know, is just okay. So
that whole process, you can do a Sunday afternoon, go to the grocery store. You know, what my daughter and I like to do is, and she likes to cook. So we'll find a meal that she wants to prepare. We'll print off the ingredient list and then we'll go to the store. We'll buy the ingredients and prepare the meal as a family or just the two of us. And then during the process, we talk about, you know, with the kids, hey, this meal ended up costing $3.22 per person. you know, and look at the type of food that we got for that meal. If we were to gone out to eat, we would have spent, you know, 50, 60 bucks after you add in a tip and all that with four kids.
Is there something you're not telling us, Chad?
No, not that I know of, unless we're adopting. And you know, that helps them understand, one, you got to spend time as a family, but it helps them understand, wow, you know, I got a really good meal here and we saved a lot of money. So it's a nice little process there. Comparison to shopping, we just talked about that. My wife is big on the yard sale. I am not. I don't like doing a yard sale. I don't like putting the time and effort into it. I'd rather just donate the money, get my slip, and have a tax deduction. But my wife does like yard sale shopping, and she likes having a yard sale. Unfortunately, she just married the wrong guy for any support in that cause. But comparison shopping, like we talk about. Here's a product, you know, you can buy brand name Life cereal, or you can buy, you know, the essential brand from Shop and Save, and it's $1.25 less. It's the same thing.
Well, it takes a lot of shopping, and I will say that in some cases, some of the brand products are probably worth it, in my opinion. It just depends on what particular brand you're talking about, what particular type of product, because some of them, the off brands, just they're cheaper, but they just don't have
my wife is big on the Heinz quality. Ketchup. She will do nothing but Heinz ketchup.
Okay.
I'm probably more on the A1 steak sauce. The knockoff brands of the A1, just, I don't know if they have some patent or something, but it's just not the same.
Just doesn't get there. Well, we're halfway there, John, so hopefully you have lots more to talk about today.
Yep. So,
did you get an allowance growing up?
I did not. I was probably 12-ish, and I cut lawns during the summer.
Yeah, I would have to go with that.
In the winter, where I grew up on the East Coast, I got to shovel a lot of snow.
Lots of snow.
And then I was also a paper boy, which I'm not sure I made money in that venture. But some fun stories about being a paper boy.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah, you don't see those anymore. Now you got a car that drives down the street and throws them. You know, and then as soon as I turned 16, my first job was at the mall at an Orange Julius. So I started working pretty early on, but I think my parents are more of the mindset, there's a roof over your house, there's food on the table, there's just some things you have to do to maintain that status.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is helpful. And I likewise did not get an allowance. So any spending money that I wanted to have was either, as you said, you know, I cut grass during the summers. I was pretty young. I can't even remember how young I was, probably by today's standards, you know, 14, maybe 15. I don't know. Started working at the Chamber of Commerce, of all places, as their cleaning person. You know, I would go in and mop and dust and strip the floors and wax and do all that, and windows. I had lots of fun doing that stuff for about a year coming up. But it was good, hard work, and something gave me an opportunity to put value into a hard day's work, mostly in the evenings and on weekends, of course, and moved on from there to other ventures. But I think it's good for kids to get an idea of what it takes to earn money and what that money will buy, because if they're making whatever, if it's the minimum wage or, you know, even a dollar or two more, depending on what they're doing, you know, how does that relate to a good family meal? How does that relate to, in today's dollars, you know, a gallon of gas, if you're going to put it in a car or vehicle? And certainly with school, because as we talked on the last show, school is not inexpensive by any means. You can get a good education without spending, you know, six figures, but it takes money to actually accomplish that. And it needs to be in a field that you can make enough money to make it worthwhile.
Oh, absolutely. So those ideas that we just talked about were basically your preteen activities and ideas. Now let's look at some activities and ideas for when the kids grow up and they become early teenagers. You mentioned the allowance. If you are going to do the allowance, this one here says give commissions, not allowances. I like that idea.
That's good.
Don't just give your kids money for breathing. That is called an entitlement, and that is what has gotten our country into a lot of trouble.
Big trouble.
Pay them commissions based on chores they do around the house. As we talked about, we like to set up this is your existence in our house and contributions to the family, and then here's a list of things that if you elect to do, you can earn money on. Stress the importance of giving. Once they have some money, teach them. I find that my kids are very generous, whether it's with church or so forth. And then during the holidays, we try to have charitable discussions and education with that. Something I read as we were doing this that I'm going to start with my older two is have them look at companies. Like my son is a big Apple. He's got the iPad and everything that he has is his iPad. So, you know, have him research a couple companies and then we'll take $100 and create a portfolio. And then every month or so, come back and look at the value of the portfolio. And that will teach him, you know, how the market moves and how to evaluate companies and so forth. Set a budget. How about that?
Budgets.
I haven't heard that before on the show.
No, never.
When they become teenagers, you could set up a bank account. When they get to be old enough, help them find a job. As I said before, I mowed grass. My son last year mowed grass. This year, unfortunately, the people that he mowed for went to one of those big companies, if you will, landscaping companies that come in and do it. Teach them the danger of credit cards, and you're going to next show, you'll be talking more about credit score. But I mean, I remember even when I was in college getting inundated with credit card offers. And, it, you know, if they don't have that knowledge going in, it looks like free money and can be quite dangerous.
You mean you have to pay that back?
Yeah, well, that's what they say.
But all the advertisements say that even if, you know, especially if you have more than $5,000 or $10,000 in debt, that you can get that written off. You don't have to pay it all back.
Right. Let's see.
That's what they say anyway.
Allowing young people to make spending decisions. You can initiate open discussion of spending pros and cons before the spending takes place. Teach them how to do some research and do some homework. You know, before we may be in a store and the kids will see something, I'll say, well, let's go home, look it up on the computer, because I'm pretty sure whether it's Amazon or eBay or whatever, that we could probably find that product for a lot less, and you don't get the markup because of the box store, the overhead and all the expenses at the box store.
Brick and mortar.
There you go.
Brick and mortar.
Show children how to evaluate TV, radio, and print ads for products.
What a good idea.
Yeah, that is a good one. Our kids have learned. My oldest son, he's got a lot of me in him. He's very skeptical. So he thinks everyone's out to get him, kind of. It's a scam. And sometimes I have to kind of pull him back off that negativity.
off the cliff.
It's like, okay, let's evaluate this. You know, not everyone's out to get you, but I'm glad you have that edge of skepticism in you.
Be cautious, yeah. Well, it takes me back to my days here at SIU in the mass communications department and when we were studying media advertising. Imagine that. When you actually sit down and you look, whether it's television or radio, certainly on the blogs now out there, but when you sit down and actually analyze and understand what goes into making a good ad, it helps you determine whether or not the product is really a benefit or if they're just hyping something that otherwise you probably wouldn't buy if it wasn't for the nice looking car or person or persons in the commercial that entice you to go out there and buy it. So yeah, it's very interesting when you do sit down. And one of my pet peeves, I know you didn't ask, but I'm going to tell you anyway, one of my pet peeves in watching television in particular is the inconsistency of the shoots, the shots that they have when they're in a car chase and a car, you know, was going down the road, and the next shot it's going the opposite direction, or when, you know, the person in the picture has a green shirt on, and then all of a sudden they, you know, they break away and take another shot and then come back to them and they have a blue shirt on, and just total inconsistency. That blows my mind. I totally lose with their advertising because of the image change that is not consistent with what they're doing. So I don't know who's directing these things, but they need some work.
Well, for me, the one that gets me is especially if you're out on the internet and there's weight loss ones and the picture of the person pre using the product, you know, they have them just no makeup, looking just horrible, mm-hmm. and unflattering clothing that's, you know, way too tight to exaggerate the overweightness of the person. And then the after using the product, all of a sudden they decided to take a shower and put on some makeup, and now they have really nice looking clothes on. And really, did that product make that total transformation for that person? They're the ones that kind of get me, and that's what I try to highlight to the children is, you know, that is what we call marketing, and it's not always going to be the truth.
Staging. They definitely stage it.
So another one, teach them what interest rates are, what the impact of buying something on credit. You know, so if you buy a $500 TV and the credit card rate is 18%.
Ouch.
And you're going to pay $31.85 a month. By the time you pay off that TV, you've paid $575 for that $500 TV.
I really hate paying interest. It's against my better judgment.
Oh, there's some good debt and there's bad debt. You know, your home, mortgage interest, not everyone has the cash available to drop, you know, X hundreds of thousands of dollars on a house.
Very true.
But if you're, you know, we always do the cost of carry analysis for clients where, you know, okay, if you have an interest rate of 3.5%, you adjust that for taxes, you need to be earning, you know, 4.5% on your investments to break even. Good chance you can earn that. So it's worth carrying the debt in that situation. If you are paying 15% interest and then you adjust that for taxes, now you're at 18%. You're not going to find that type of return in the stock market on a consistent basis to warrant carrying that debt. So there's good debt, there's bad debt. It should be common sense. It's not common sense, but if you sit down with someone, you go through a plan, you do the analysis, it's very easy to learn what is good debt, what is bad debt. I had this situation, which I thought was very interesting. A couple came in, we went through their finances, and their children were with them, and I just assumed, that's what happens when you assume, that the kids wanted to go in a separate room and play on their iPad, and they were like, no, we want them in the room with us, even though one was in grade school, one was in high school. Because we went through the financial plan on our monitor and screen, so the kids were able to watch and learn, see what their parents were doing, and I thought that was just a wonderful experience for their family, because the kids kind of got to learn what was going on, the importance of saving and planning, and that their parents were setting the example by their actions, I should say.
It's a very, very good opportunity to learn. And you might almost say in some cases it's by osmosis, but just being there, hearing the terms, hearing the decisions that are made, you know, we'll do A instead of B, and how we evaluate those things goes back to a plan. Imagine that. You have to have a plan, and that helps determine exactly what you should be doing. But teach kids often and teach them early.
And I don't know, maybe it's a generational. I know... my parents, they never talk about their financial status.
Mine either. That was not that generation.
So, you know, I really have very little idea. And, you know, I see the way my wife and I are, and the way this couple was very similar in ages to us. And how open, and I think that's I don't know why it was always held such a secret in earlier generations. What it just was never discussed at all, ever, other than we don't have the money.
Yeah, we can't do that because we don't have the money. Yeah, that's about what it was. Yeah.
Money doesn't go on trees. I heard that one a lot.
That one, yeah, very good. And planning, you know, was a word that came up fairly often. You know, we'll have to plan for that. We need a new TV. We need a lawnmower. We need a new car. Well, we'll have to plan for that. And I think that's the key. It's not an impulse type of purchase, but you have to plan for it, put money away, know how you're going to pay for it. But you're right. I did not become involved in my parents' financial situation until they were well into their 80s, and it was necessitated by health that I take over, the financial situation. But my dad was, he used the old ledger pencil and pad, and that's how he tracked things. And, you know, there were a couple of times where when we were building our first home, and we needed, we wanted to put on a fire, or put in the fireplace and a deck, and, you know, we needed $4,000 or $5,000. I didn't happen to have it in savings, so I'd borrow it from my dad, and he'd sit down and do a promissory note, and okay, here's how much it is, and here's how you pay it back, and you know, it'd be in the old ledger, and I paid it back with interest, and I learned that that's what you do. You know, if you know, my philosophy has always been, you know, don't give somebody a loan or money unless it's a gift, because you may or may not get it back, is my philosophy.
And that's good. That's actually a good approach when it comes to family. I've told my wife before, you know, don't view this as a loan. It's a gift, because if you view it as a loan and it doesn't come back,
and you're mad.
Exactly. And you have to mentally say this is a gift and be done with it and move on. When you're at the family table, like, not just, you know, we just talked about, you know, doing the cost evaluation of preparing a meal at home, but that's a good time to sit down and discuss financial topics with your children. Show them how much things cost, you know, the electric bill, especially after this heat wave that we had. I'm kind of nervous when this one comes in, because I don't think the air conditioner turned off. But there are things that you can do to help your children when, you know, different stages of life, things that you can do when they're young, when they're in their teenage years. We will be talking about the next show. We'll be talking about credit score, how expensive college is, because once they're in their teenage years, you're, you know, probably in the next couple of years, you know, we're going to have to sit down with Declan. He'll be sophomore in high school, I'm guessing. Wow. When we start looking at, what are we going to do about college? What are you thinking? And let's start getting the application process going. Let's start visiting the schools to get all the information that we need to prepare for that. And if they don't have any idea going up to that point what things cost, they're not going to appreciate how expensive a college education can be. A couple of websites that, as I was going through the research for today's show, that has good information. The first one is www.familyeducation.com/kids/money-kids. And that provided all kinds of drop-down menus and so forth to come up with activities, game plans for different ages and so forth of your children on what you can do to help them with teaching them about money. Another one was www.mint.com/, and there's a hyphen between each word in this, but Ultimate Resources for Teaching Kids About Money. That was another.
That's a mouthful is what that is.
Yeah, well, that gets you to the, but it's ultimate-resources-for-teaching-kids-about-money.
Wow.
Yes. So there were two good resources. We've kind of touched on what we've done with our children, how we continue. It's a never ending process. But there are, as with anything, the earlier you start, as small as it may be, as small as it may seem when they're little, and you build on that, by the time they are off on college and on their own, you've given them every opportunity, every resource, and all the tools necessary to be able to do things on their own. And as with anything else with children, you hope some of it sticks.
Well, and it's about choices, John. I think you have to evaluate colleges based on cost, based on merit, based on the result that you hope to attain. based on scholarships. You know, if you're fortunate enough, you have a child who is a good athlete, is good at academics, has specific talents. There are tons, as we've talked before. There's a lot of money out there in scholarships. There are scholarships from different organizations, service organizations, certainly, that you may or may not belong to. You know, the Rotary, the Kiwanis, the Optimist, to name just a couple. I know here at Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, there are, as we've talked about before, there are a ton of scholarships that go untapped because people either don't know about them, they don't take advantage of applying, they miss the deadlines. There are some that are strictly academic from writing a paper. You know, why some of the alumni scholarships and the foundation scholarships are, you know, talk about, you know, America, talk about the value of a college education, talk about, you know, why you want to go to college and what you hope to achieve. And those are all reviewed. I've been on many of the committees that review scholarship applications and read through literally hundreds in some cases of submissions to determine, narrow down to the top 10, which then, you know, you narrow down to 5, which then you narrow down to, depending on how many scholarships you have, sometimes we'll do 3 or 4 on some of the boards, and some are full ride scholarships, covers all tuition and room and board. Some are a specific dollar amount, maybe $1,000 for the year, $2,000 for the semester, whatever it happens to be. But there is a lot of money available. So it is about choice. You know, look, I love to play the what if game with my daughter. I've done that for her entire life, and it's become somewhat ingrained in her by choice or by go back to the old osmosis. But when you talk about taking a loan out, you know, when you're buying a house, the bank is going to evaluate your income, your ability to repay the loan. That's the only thing that matters to them, and that you're buying a property via an appraisal that is worth what they're lending you. So if you don't pay it back, then they're going to sell it and get their money back out of it. But the interesting thing that I think Christy learned along the way is preparing to build. If you ever venture upon building something, a house, or building out a building, for example, as we are right now, again, through her new office, is putting together a budget. It goes back to the old B word. It's a budget. And there are specific architectural categories that you can use and spreadsheets that I built to show the bank that we know what the electric, and, you know, we've accounted for the electric, the plumbing, the mechanical, you know, the finishes, the foundation, the footing, et cetera, et cetera. And some of my budgets have, you know, 50 or 60 line items, but, you know, the millwork, you know, finishing, whatever happens to be. But when I take that to a bank and say, this is what I'm building, this is what, based on common knowledge, that it is going to cost, and they're willing then to loan you the money. If you just go in and say, hey, I want a couple hundred thousand dollars, I want to build a building, they'll kind of look at you and go, yeah, sure you do. The other thing that happens, many of the financial institutions use escrow. I have never used escrow on any of my transactions. Typically, that's you hire a third party, sometimes a title company, sometimes someone else. They typically charge 1% of whatever the value of your project is. And that's what they charge to do the accounting, just to make sure that you're on budget and you're not spending more than was accounted for in the original projection. So it can be done. It can be done easily. And knowing how to go about doing that makes the building project end up on budget, which amazingly enough is something that they like to see happen normally.
Another point, as far as you mentioned budget, I had a little bullet point here. Prepaid cards, in this case, they call it stored value cards. But as they get older, if you know they're going off to college, and you go through, sit down with them, and what, you know, school supplies, books, different things that you're going to need for that semester, and you then provide a prepaid card for them, and they'll learn the hard way that if they blow through it on stuff that they're not supposed to be spending, or they're not doing their their shopping and research on prices and so forth, that they're going to run out of money, and they're out of money for the rest of that semester. They'll learn very quickly. And that's a great way to then, instead of just giving them a credit card, you know, have it a prepaid card, so they kind of get the feel for the transaction, how it works. You know, we've talked about before a study that was done that said, okay, if you pay cash for something, if you pay debit, and if you pay credit, how does the brain really perceive those transactions? And if you pay cash for something, the part of your brain that senses and registers pain becomes very active. If you pay for it with a debit card, that part of the brain becomes active, but it's not nearly as bright. And if you pay credit for it, there's almost no activity in that part of the brain. And that's a scary, I mean, that's dangerous.
It is dangerous. It gets you in trouble almost every time, John. Almost every time.
Use these prepaid cards to buy things without using cash or credit cards. Parents load the cards, and then based on the teen's budget, that's what they get. And then it's on their end to learn how to manage that budget and be responsible with the amount of money that they're getting. Whereas with credit, you know, unfortunately, that just doesn't teach those values.
You have to pay that back, John?
Somebody's going to.
Somebody's going to pay it back.
If your child's in school and not earning money,
yeah,
you know that's going to be.
Good luck with that. Thanks again to Premier Fiduciary Services, one of our underwriters for the show. John does a great job. We've been meeting with plan sponsors recently, employers, performing benchmarking of their qualified plans to show them that in some cases there can be a significant savings both in administration and the cost of the funds, not to mention the fact that the Department of Labor and the IRS is all in favor of doing that periodically to make sure that you have the plan that is in best interest of your participants. And also the Chef Shop. So our underwriters, we wouldn't be here without them. Thanks to them. Get out. If you haven't been in the Chef Shop recently, now would be a great time to do it. Wrap it up summer. A lot of programs, a lot of sales that are going on. I think they're going to reschedule the Green Egg
I definitely
event.
Want to go to that.
Well, it was scheduled, but...
I wasn't going to go when it was 112.
Yeah, 112. They thought the egg might fry.
Yeah. See what I put up with, folks? I have to deal with this.
That's how it works. And there's a couple other things I thought we'd touch on today real quickly in the last minute or so. I thought these were some funny quotes. We like to get those in. I know some of our listeners have asked me why some shows we don't do them. And I said, well, quite frankly, we run out of time.
We run out of time or we forget.
Or we forget. But either way.
We'll go with the run out of time. That sounds better.
Yeah, I thought this was a good one. You know, John, it's a good thing to go by. Expecting the world to treat you fairly because you're a good person is a little like expecting the bull not to attack because you're a vegetarian. I thought that was good.
That one is good.
And then there's this one. You know, light travels faster than sound. We've talked about that. And that's why some people appear to be bright until you hear them speak.
Oh, gosh. That would be inside the Beltway in D.C.
Yeah, that way. Exactly. Yeah, no doubt about that. And remember, today is the tomorrow you worried about yesterday.
Whoa, that's deep.
That's deep. Think about that one for a while.
Let me get some more coffee.
We're going to wrap this one up here, John. Thanks for listening. This is The Financial Cafe. You can find us our web and the blogs of the shows at thefinancialcafe.us. You can also email us at lxo@nickelfinancial.com or jgraney@nickelfinancial.com. And thanks for listening to WSIE-FM 88.7 on the dial, the sound here on the beautiful campus of Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville. If you have questions, send them in to us. We'd love to talk about it on the air. If you have some topics of interest you'd like us to take up some of the upcoming shows, feel free to pass that on also. We're starting to plan for the fall season. Guys, we're getting into August, September, October, and all of a sudden it's Christmas again, John. So we'll be attempting to deal with some unique and interesting topics and probably a few old ones also. So as we wind things down, thanks again for listening, and we will talk to you next time. Say goodbye, John.
Goodbye, John.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to the Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.